This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. With another street protest planned for tomorrow, Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, today put off further action on the extradition bill, which has caused deep concern in the Chinese autonomous territory. Despite the drama of it, Lam sounded low-key.
I want to stress that the government is adopting an open mind to heed comprehensively different views in society towards the bill. The Secretary for Security will send a letter to the Legislative Council President to withdraw the notice of resumption of a second reading debate on the bill. In other words, the Council will halt its work in relation to the bill until our work in communication, explanation, and listening to opinions is completed.
The extradition measure would allow criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial, a cause for alarm for a wide cross-section of Hong Kong's population, especially pro-democracy forces. Hong Kong human rights activist Bonnie Leung says the protests must continue.
We urge all the individuals, chambers of commerce, workers, students who have any related to Hong Kong, you must keep concerning about our situation and keep voicing out, not only for the sake of Hong Kong people, but also for your own sake.
Richard Ratcliffe, a British citizen, says his Iranian-born wife has begun a new hunger strike in jail in Iran. The woman holds both British and Iranian citizenship.
She sent in a letter to the judiciary saying that enough was enough and that she was starting a hunger strike and requesting to be unconditionally released, were her words. She's eligible, so wanted to make that point. As you say, this isn't the first hunger strike she's been on, so I promised that if she went on another one, then I would join her.
To keep up to date on all the day's news, you can always go online to voanews.com. This is VOA News from Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump says there is no doubt that Iran is responsible for this week's crippling of two tankers in the Gulf of Oman, deepening tensions between Washington and Tehran. Speaking on Fox and Friends, Mr. Trump cited U.S. military video that purports to show Revolutionary Guards removing an unexploded mine from one of the vessels.
Iran did do it, and you know they did it because you saw the boat. I guess one of the mines didn't explode, and it's probably got essentially Iran written all over it.
Acting U.S. Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan says the United States wants to build a global consensus on the attacks.
We had the big push in the last 24 hours to continue to get information out, continue to share intelligence, and you'll continue to see us work to do that as part of building the international consensus.
The World Health Organization has decided the Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo is not yet a global public health emergency. Preben Avitslan is the acting chair of the WHO's Emergency Committee.
We risk to see restrictions on travel and trade. We risk to see airlines stopping their flights to the area. And we also risk border closures or restrictive measures at border that could severely harm the economy in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Meanwhile, the panel of experts warns that a lack of funding could undercut efforts to contain the deadly virus, which has so far taken 1,400 lives in the DRC. Amid reactions ranging from Republican concern to Democratic outrage here in Washington, President Trump is backing away from his earlier assertion over how he would respond if a foreign power offered him negative information on a political opponent. Here's AP Sagar Magani.
The president says, of course, he'd look at the information.
Because if you don't look at it, you're not going to know if it's bad. How are you going to know if it's bad?
Earlier this week, he told ABC News he would not necessarily tell law enforcement. On Fox and Friends.
But of course you'd give it to the FBI or report it to the Attorney General or somebody like that.
Democrats had blasted the president's earlier comments, saying he was all but inviting more election interference next year. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Disclosures released this weekend show that President Trump's daughter, Ivanka, and her husband, Jared Kushner, took in as much as $135 million in revenue during their second year as aides to the president. Most of the cash was generated from vast real estate holdings, stocks and bonds, and a book deal. For more news, voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News, Washington. We'll be right back.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
You cannot slap a woman within parliament. You know, first of all, she's a woman, you are a man, you are an honorable member within parliament itself. Look, you can't get away with that by a mere prosecution in court.
Kenyan groups demand the resignation of a parliamentarian for assaulting a colleague.
It's always this type of a thing that happens, that whenever there is a government, there will be other people who will also complain, maybe to out the incumbent prime minister.
A lawmaker files a petition of no confidence against Lesotho Prime Minister Dr. Thomas Tabani.
I have contact with the people in the Foreign Service, and they have appealed to me to speak on their behalf because this government is not paying them. And I did confirm with some officials at Foreign Affairs Office here in Zambia, and they said yes.
And a Zambian opposition leader criticizes the government for not paying diplomats abroad. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Civil society and human rights groups are calling on a Kenyan parliamentarian to resign immediately for bringing the name of the lawmaking body into disrepute. The call came after Rashid Kassim was charged Friday for allegedly assaulting Fatuma Geddi, a colleague parliamentarian. Kassim is said to have slapped Geddi for not allocating resources to his constituency. The groups say it is not acceptable for the male parliamentarian to slap a female colleague, which they contend sets a bad example to the country's youth. For more about the fallout, I reach Professor Herman Manyora, a senior lecturer at the University of Nairobi.
I think our constitution is very clear. And this gentleman has violated the constitution. The member of parliament is a state officer, and state officers are expected to behave in a manner that brings honor to the office and the people of Kenya. Around 2013 or thereabouts, our first deputy chief, just under the new constitution that we gave ourselves in 2010, lost her job as deputy chief just because of relatively simple act of misbehavior. Some kind of problem between her and the guard. That was enough for her to vacate office. And I think people are saying we must go back to those kind of standards, where an officer of this kind of standing, doing what he did, that has brought shame and ridicule to parliament itself and to other honorable members of parliament. I think something much more serious than just being charged should happen to this gentleman. That's what people are saying. Made to resign.
Some are saying he should be recalled. Others are saying he should be forced to resign. But some groups of people are also saying that being charged or being prosecuted for allegedly assaulting his fellow colleague should be enough.
You see, criminal charges are different from matters of integrity. There's not, the criminal proceedings can go on, but as a matter of principle in terms of integrity, in terms of what we expect from our leaders of that high kind of office, I think for purposes of hygiene in our policy and to get back where we ought to be, really, where we thought we were when we enacted this new country, this gentleman should be made to lose it. I think that's what many reasonable Kenyans are saying. You cannot slap a woman within parliament. You know, first of all, she's a woman, you are a man, you are an honorable member within parliament itself. Look, you can't get away with that by a mere prosecution in court, no.
Some are also saying this is a dangerous precedent for Kenyan youth because people know that there are a lot of societal issues that do not necessarily promote women. And for this to happen sets women back in their fight for equity and equality in Kenya. Your thoughts?
Yes, at a time Kenyans are having struggle with affirmative action. At a time we are trying to make sure women get placed within governance structures, within political space. At a time we are pushing for this, using all avenues, then a man comes and does this to a woman. You know, it is baffling why he would do that. At a time everybody is saying we want our daughters to know their dreams are valid, like this. They can become anything they should they want to become. They can become politicians, and nobody should harass them because of going into politics. This is an honorable woman doing an honorable job. When you come and do that kind of thing, what are you telling the world? What are you telling girls? What are we telling our boys that they can beat their wives in future? They can beat their schoolmates, college mates, university mates. They can beat their workmates. No, I think it's a bad signal this gentleman is sending to men in general, especially young.
Professor Manyora, some are saying that asking him to be forced out of parliament is not a good thing because he was fighting for his constituency. Despite using the wrong method, instead of using the right processes legally in parliament to channel, to get things for his constituency.
My friend, in the 21st century, you cannot fight for anything using your fist. Well, in the 21st century, against a woman. And in any case, that woman merely sits in a committee that makes certain decisions. She doesn't make the decisions. I mean, what kind of power would a single member of parliament have to distribute goodies through the budget done by a committee she's a member of? She has very limited powers. Even if she had, you wouldn't fight for anything, not for anything, using your feet, least of all against a woman.
Professor Herman Manyora is a senior lecturer at the Kenyan University of Nairobi. He spoke with me from Nairobi. A lawmaker from the Lesotho ruling party, All Basotho Convention, or ABC, has filed a petition of no confidence against Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. Motebang Koma filed the petition following a recent split within the rank-and-file members of the party. Some members of the party blame Prime Minister Thabane for the tension despite his recent calls for unity. The Prime Minister warned that if the disagreement is not amicably resolved, the party will lose power. For analysis of the latest political development, I reached the principal chief of Thabo Bosiu, Hwaba Niteko, who is also the Senate chief whip.
Well, that really shows that there's a lot of discomfort by half of the members of that ruling party about how the prime minister is governing the country and the party itself. So basically, it's sort of a revolt that is really coming through because of their grievances against the way he operates, the way he really runs the party as the leader.
But recently, I understand he was calling for unity within the rank and file of the ruling party coalition, saying that without unity of purpose in the party could disintegrate and they could lose power. What is happening?
No, he's doing the very same thing. In front of the public, he'll always claim unity. He'll always call for it. But at the end of the day, in his office, at his own house, because he's running it in a kitchen cabinet, that the cabinet follows his instructions, that he comes from his own house where he's got his own gangsters of people who follow him and, of course, are working for him, advises him against his government's will.
Are the people of Lesotho seeing the end, supposedly, of Prime Minister Tom Thabane after being elected for the second time as the Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Lesotho?
Oh, certainly, because there are so many people within his own party and other members of parliament who are not from his party but who really are tired of his rule, the style of rule. So they all want him out. Once he opens the parliament in September, they all are gunning for his ousting.
Why has it become all of a sudden so unpopular? Because they chose him as the Prime Minister of Lesotho.
Yes, it's 2 years now that he was chosen as such. But his way of rule has really gotten everybody tired of his style of rule, where he rules with his Mugabe style. Crazy and Mugabe style, etc.
Are the people of Lesotho expecting a caretaker prime minister before elections?
Yes, people are preparing themselves, but Lesotho is totally broke, I can tell you. I don't see them going to elections very easily. They want to form a government within the parliament and make a sort of a new coalition, maybe.
So why are there so many frictions within the ruling party coalition? Because two or so years ago, Pakadita Mosesidi also lost in a similar fashion.
Yeah, that's how things happen in our political conundrum nowadays. It's always this type of a thing that happens, but whenever there is a government, there'll be other people who will also complain, maybe to out the incumbent prime minister.
So how does this lead to political stability in the Southern African region if Lesotho is seen as politically unstable, not security-wise, but politically unstable with frequent changes in government? How do you ensure that there is continuity of development, politically speaking?
Well, I tell you what, SADC and UN and AU have tried everything in the book to try to bring come into the city's politics. But every time we have a new government, there's always big trouble. And when the people choose to rule their own way, not according to the issues of how the constitution demands or other laws that govern the city.
What do you see when parliament reopens in September? What are your predictions, if I may ask?
I predict a total revolt, I tell you. Total revolt against the incumbent prime minister.
Hwabani Theko is the principal chief of the Thabo Bosiu and the Senate Chief Whip. He spoke with me from the Lesotho capital, Maseru. The leader of the Zambian opposition National Democratic Congress is coming under criticism for saying the country's diplomats have not been paid for the last 3 months. Chishimba Kambwili claimed the government is broke and unable to pay diplomats, but supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front Party rejected the accusations as without merit, saying Kambwili seeks attention to be politically relevant. For more about his criticisms, I reach opposition leader Chishimba Kambwili.
It's a fact, my brother. You see, employees in the Foreign Service cannot speak out or confirm to any media house because they'll be fired. Several of them have called me that they've not been paid. This is now going into the third month. And I know it is true because when you come here in Zambia, most of the grant-aided institutions, the local authorities have not paid people for over 6 months because government has not been sending the grants to the local authorities, has not been sending grants to the grant-aided institution. So it is true. I have information from reliable sources and employees in the Foreign Service, and they know that because me, I speak for on behalf of the downtrodden. And that's why they called me to say that this is the situation and that we can't speak out. When we speak out, we'll be fired. We've been threatened. But the fact is that they have not been paid for 3 months now.
Supporters of the Patriotic Front and some government officials have demanded your proof or evidence to back your allegation up.
My brother, the truth and only the truth will set us free. The Patriotic Front and those in government are trying to cover themselves up. The truth of the matter, and get it from me, I was Minister of Foreign Affairs, Labour, I was Minister of Information, I was Minister of Youth and Sport. I have contact with the people in the Foreign Service, and they have appealed to me to speak on their behalf because this government is not paying them. And I did confirm with some officials at Foreign Affairs office here in Zambia, and they said yes.
Supporters of the PF are saying this is yet another propaganda to make yourself relevant in the political ongoings in Zambia, and that your party, the NDC, has failed to make any significant inroads, and this is one allegation you are making just to invite attention to yourself and your party.
My brother, ask them. If they are saying NDC has failed to make an impact, ask them why they are scared of me. Ask them why they don't allow me to have public meetings. Ask them why they don't allow me to meet officials of the party in the districts. It's because they know that NDC is the next government. So for them to tell you that NDC has failed to make an impression on the people of Zambia, they are lying. You can come as the Voice of America and do your own investigations, and you see that NDC has been burning like a wildfire here in Zambia. It is baby born with teeth. Within 1 year of existence, we have one member of parliament. There are parties that have been in Zambia in existence for 30 years, 20 years. They don't even have a councillor. But 1 year of our existence, we have a member of parliament. That shows you that we are a baby born with teeth.
What do you make of the recent findings by the Financial Intelligence Center coming up with findings of allegations of financial malfeasance or financial impropriety? Some are saying that, well, this shows that the president is committed in his fight against corruption, and that is why he made public the findings.
To the contrary, the president was the first one to rubbish the report. His ministers are rubbishing the report on a daily basis. The PF party are rubbishing the report. President Edgar Lungu has no political will to fight corruption. President Lungu, before he became president, he said he was worth 1 million kwacha. 1 year after being president, he declared that he was worth 23 million kwacha. He's been running what is known as Presidential Empowerment Fund. He has given out a total of 30 million kwacha. Where is he getting the money? Because that is not budgeted for, and that is not government money.
Chishimba Kambwili is the leader of the Zambian Opposition National Democratic Congress. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Meanwhile, the Zambian ruling party, the Patriotic Front, or PF, is accusing leaders of the state-run Financial Intelligence Center of working to embarrass President Edgar Lungu. The PF says the president is committed to weed out corruption in the southern African country. The party's remarks came after the president was criticized by some for failing in his fight against graft. Opposition groups say cases of corruption have increased and the president has failed to demand an investigation into prosecution of those financial impropriety. For reaction, I reached Antonio Mwanza, the deputy media director for the Zambian ruling party, the PF.
President Edgar Lungu and the Patriotic Front believes very sincerely that corruption is a cancer that has to be fought, because as Patriotic Front, we believe that you do not fight corruption by talking tough. You fight corruption by putting the necessary legislation in place to fight that corruption. The Financial Intelligence Center, which has been in existence and in operation since 2013, has become prominent today because we have allowed them the leverage by amending the law that they can be communicating to the public. What we have made very clear is that the Financial Intelligence Center operates under the dictates of the Financial Intelligence Center Act, an act which gives guidance as to what the Financial Intelligence Center must do, what its responsibilities are, who they should be reporting to, and what information they should be communicating to the public.
If that is the case, why then is President Edgar Lungu calling on the same Financial Intelligence Center to name names in its report or its findings? Some people are saying this is a demonstration that President Edgar Lungu is not serious in the fight against corruption. How do you react to that?
The president has been very categorical that the information that has been shared by the Financial Intelligence Center has no names. It just says X collected money from Y, and Y is a company which comes from Z, domiciled in X. And that kind of information is not helpful. So it is wrong, it is unprofessional, and it is unethical for the Financial Intelligence Center to get raw data that is not verified, that is has no evidence, that has no facts, and take it to the public and start a battle to create an image that 6.1 billion of Zambian kwacha has been stolen, when in fact they cannot even establish who has stolen the money because there are no names.
Some are saying when the Financial Intelligence Center report came out, the president was dismissive. What they said, the president said, was it's just infriti, and that the president's attitude towards the report has been lackadaisical and not serious. And they said the findings show that corruption has sharply increased under President Edgar Lungu, despite promises that he's fighting against corruption.
Contrary to those reports, let me just put it in context. When the president used the phrase infriti, which means witchcraft, there was a narration. He said, what the Financial Intelligence Center has done is to scream lion, but they can't show the people where the lion is coming from. Can they name the people who are accused of having been involved in money laundering? They have failed to name those people in their report. So what is the use of the report that does not even name names? Has been very, very key in issues of fighting corruption. And if you look at the Auditor General's report, that is coming annually, you see that the cases of misapplication and misappropriation of public resources under President Edgar Lungu have started going down. It is unprofessional, it is unethical to take intelligence data and start having press briefings. It is very clear on our side that the board chairman of the Financial Intelligence Center and the director of the Financial Intelligence Center don't mean well for this country. They are unpatriotic, and their aim is to tarnish the image of President Edgar Lungu and the Patriotic Front government, and we have no any doubt that they are working for the opposition political parties.
Antonio Mwanza is the Deputy Media Director for the Zambian ruling party, Patriotic Front, or PF. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. An emergency meeting convened by the World Health Organization has decided the Ebola epidemic in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo does not constitute a public health emergency of international concern. However, the expert committee warns lack of funding threatens to hamper the ability to contain the deadly virus. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
More than 1,400 people have died from Ebola in eastern DR Congo, and more than 2,100 are infected with this fatal disease. This makes the epidemic in conflict-ridden North Kivu province the second largest after the West African outbreak in 2014, which killed some 11,300 people. The recent spread of the Ebola virus into neighboring Uganda and deaths of two people prompted the World Health Organization to gather a group of experts to reassess the current situation and challenges ahead. However, despite the grim tally and uncertain outlook, acting chair of the emergency committee, Preben Avitsland, says the committee agrees the outbreak is a health emergency in the DRC and in the region, but poses a very low risk to countries outside the region. Indeed, he warns of serious consequences for the DRC by declaring the outbreak a global emergency.
We risk to see restrictions on travel and trade. We risk to see airlines stopping their flights to the area. And we also risk border closures or restrictive measures at border that could severely harm the economy in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Avislan says the committee decided there was little to gain, but much to lose by declaring the outbreak a public health emergency of international concern. He says the most serious issue facing the Ebola operation is lack of international support. He says WHO and the affected countries have not received the funding and resources needed to bring the epidemic to an end. He warns lack of funding is hampering preparedness efforts in Uganda and other countries neighboring the DRC, and this, he warns, increases their vulnerability to the potential spread of the virus. WHO reports it needs $98 million through July, but is running a shortfall of $54 million. It is calling on the international community to step up and fill this gap as soon as possible. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Thank you.
are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, a two-day conference called The Role of the Diaspora in State Building, Advancing Governance, Democracy and Citizenry Development Oriented has ended in The Gambia. It was organized by the Gambia chapter of the Right to Know Africa organization and other groups. Reporter Pat Nderi Mbai has more.
This Right to Know conference was the first of its kind. It brought together political activists, policymakers, and experts from within the Gambia and abroad. In his address, Adama Jeng, the UN Secretary General's Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide, raised the issue of tribalism, which he said is on the increase in Mali, Southern Sudan, and the Central African Republic. He said the crisis in Mali, for example, is partly rooted in the fact that the armed forces there are not tribally diverse. He said 75% of the Malian army comes from the Bambara ethnic group, while the Fulani tribe is scantily represented.
One thing which is important is that fostering inclusivity will definitely contribute towards preventing governance crisis.
Jeng noted that tribalism was a feature of former dictator James rule. That is why he raised the alarm bell at the UN in 2016 when James refused to relinquish power. In January 2017, soon after losing a shock election, James fled into exile. Jeng called on Gambians to remain united as Gambians, not as members of separate tribes.
The prevention of atrocity crime is really the responsibility of each and every one of us. And everyone has a responsibility, and we need to make efforts to understand the root causes and the dynamics of atrocity crimes.
In 2014, Jeng's office instituted a program which detects and analyzes the early warning signs of potential genocide and other crimes against humanity. He says corruption and weak institutions can contribute to those outcomes. Sidi Moro Sani was an ambassador and a foreign minister in Jame's government. He parted company with Jame and decided to live in exile in the United States. At the conference, Sani implored Gambians to safeguard their newfound democracy. He warned that blind fidelity to leaders has no place in the nation's future.
Therefore, the challenge facing us is this. Can we keep our democracy, or are we going to allow it to slip through our fingers again for the second time? Are we going to allow sycophancy to run amok one more time, or are we going to say not on our watch? The choice is ours to make.
Sane also addressed the issue of corruption in the Gambia today. He says privately owned Gambian companies are rarely awarded government contracts. He asserts that this discriminatory practice must be stopped.
Applying taxpayers' money and donor funds in the most inefficient and corrupt way, creating distortions in the market, is only proven costlier to the public treasury and to the most vulnerable Gambians, especially those in the rural setting we swore to protect and serve.
Aminata Silla is a political science professor based in the U.S. During a question and answer session, she raised the issue of public service management in the Gambia.
As we're talking, and I just kept thinking, what is the foundation upon which our public service is built in this country? That's what I keep thinking about. Because I know in the U.S., our public service is built on honor, right? Because out of this honor, you have ethics. That's why we call up the judges your honor, because it's a privilege.
Some conference delegates express what they call lack of productivity among government workers in the Gambia. As an example, they said some workers report to work late and leave work early. Ismail Assisi teaches political science at the University of the Gambia. He is not impressed with Gambia's efforts to combat graft.
I think since independence, since the PPP government, there has not been any serious attempt really to fight corruption in this country. We never had a strategy, a formula to really fight corruption.
Assisi says raising public awareness on the dangers associated with corruption would be a good start. In his speech, the Gambia Foreign Minister Mamoru Tangara underscored the diaspora's contribution towards the country's social and economic development. He said remittances from abroad make up 20% of the Gambia's gross domestic product, GDP. For VOA Africa, this is Pan Lirimbai reporting.
After increasing the mandatory percentage of ethanol in petrol, the Zimbabwean government has raised fuel prices again
in a move that has been met with public consternation. For VOA, Eddie Gondo reports from Bulawayo.
The Zimbabwe Energy Regulatory Authority, ZERA, has raised the price of fuel for the third time in 3 months, just days after increasing the mandatory amount of ethanol in unleaded petrol from 10% to 20% in a move it said would reduce the fuel import bill. The move has been questioned by parliamentarians and ordinary Zimbabweans alike. Of particular concern to parliamentarians such as Themba Mliswa is the monopoly currently enjoyed by Green Fuel, which is owned by Billy Rattenberg. They believe the monopoly is not sustainable. Ethanol is being sold to the Zimbabwe Energy Regulatory Authority by Green Fuel at $1.70 per litre. Parliamentarians contend that the landed price of fuel from Brazil, for example, is at 50 cents. Thomas Tole, an analyst, speaks on the issue.
What Themba Mliswa said in Parliament is something the government of the day should be seized with in terms of finding solutions to these challenges. They speak to the leakages within the system where certain individuals are benefiting through corrupt means and ways and pillaging state resources.
Observers say many of the country's economic challenges lie in the existence of shadowy cartels in critical sectors of the economy. MPs question the wisdom of buying fuel from Green Fuel when there are cheaper alternatives from companies such as Triangle based in Chiredzi.
Yes, now if you look at the monopoly that Rutenberg and courts are having around Green Fuel, it's actually amazing that the government has given them a license to supply fuel, and they're the only suppliers ethanol at that price, so exorbitant a price. We can be paying far less, so citizens are being ripped off.
Energy and Power Development Minister Fojun Chasi explained that the blending of fuel was meant to reduce the fuel import bill. He referred further questions to the Zimbabwe Energy Regulatory Authority, insisting that he was responsible mainly for policy direction. Meanwhile, observers say motorists and ordinary citizens alike continue to bear the brunt of government decisions which impact their daily lives. Melody Dwe is a 50-year-old motorist in Bulawayo.
These days, the dilution is too much. I know it doesn't last because if I use the total garage fuel, it's like 15 kilometers a liter. But if I put a track garage, it's 10 kilometers a liter, meaning that there's too much dilution. No, we are really affected.
The energy minister stated that pricing is part of ZERA's mandate. Observers say that's passing the buck. Zimbabwe has been experiencing serious fuel shortages since September due to foreign currency shortages, and the recent price hikes only compound economic wars as prices are set to shoot up again. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You are hearing Rema from African Woman. Then we have Stamina Gusto with Kenyan Music, Kekero, Oh My Love. Rude Boy follows with Reason With Me, Akothi featuring Diamond with My Sweet Love. Then we top it off with Banky W with Strong Thing.
Oh, muchara, basika, baguma, banyigiriziwa, nebakola. Independent woman, African woman, oh, muchara, singa si muchara, singa sa soma, singa. Sing a singer, 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 na chingi azali de kuku ase wale ayamba na guma yenyabo baguma bagumira bichi ondendolo kukuzo mwana galuwa baguma.
niza kondai we. Bati niza kondai we. Iwe ndiwa wanga kutala. It no matter what they got, no. I don't need no millions, no. You are one in a million, darling. I got you, no need to rush. Everything crisp, you're the only one, my baby. I got you, no need to rush. I'm never letting go. You want go, you bingo. Eh, no more being tingle. I'm never letting go. You want go, you bingo. Eh, no more being tingle. Eh. A money pass a piece, a money pass a love, a money pass a what more can I ask for? A money pass a piece, a money pass a love.
I've been there begging you to try. Reason with me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. I be you one make a die. It no easy for me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. Cause I was broke.
I've been the enter Okada high. From me to matter straight to another. How I wish, say, you believe me. Back then it was Gwalanda. Those days in Junior Abuja. You insist, hey, you don't need me. Girl, I try everything to spend my life with you. Yeah, I've been there, beg you to try. Reason with me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. I be you one make a die. It's no easy for me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. Say one for the money. Now waiting she get now so she say she go run away. She go run very bad away. Yeah. I say Ramadan day, the baby come the bell. See the baby don't come again. You don't forget back in a day. I've been the beg you to try. Reason with me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. I be you one make a die. It's not easy for me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. I've been there begging to try. Reason with me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. I be you one make a die. It's not easy for me. If I don't get today, I go get them tomorrow. For the money, two for the dough, three for the shorty. Now I don't blow. One for the money, two for the dough, three for the shorty. Now I don't blow. Say one for the money, two for the dough, three for the shorty. Now I don't blow. One for the money, two for the dough, three for the shorty. Now I don't blow.
pilipili ya washa nini silisili yetu na mimi owili wili hivi wana nini binadamu bwana.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite. We say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, one who causes others misfortune also teaches them wisdom. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.